I'm Christopher Lloyd, and this is the Connection. The Waco disaster by now has a lot of the hallmarks of a classic Clinton bungle. Government stonewalling, a lively dogfight between cabinet officials, possible cover-up, lots of politics and spin. That's why the conservatives and the Wall Street Journal love this story. But the fascination with Janet Reno and Louis Spree, who are in the media crosshairs now, might just be a distraction. They were barely into their respective jobs at the start of the Waco siege, after all. Lots of people, and not just the conspiracy theorists, have been unhappy with the government's explanation of what happened at the Branch Davidian complex 6 years ago. 80 people, about 25 of them children, died in the fire there. Anger over Waco is said to be what motivated Timothy McVeigh to blow up a federal building in Oklahoma City 4 years ago, 4 years later. This hour, we're revisiting the Waco story. Dr. Alan Stone of the Harvard Law School and the Harvard Medical School is our guest. He was part of a Justice Department review panel to prevent more Wacos in the future. He published his own dissenting report on that committee. Also joining us by phone is Dick Revis, who's the author of a book called The Ashes of Waco, an Investigation. Connection listeners, we're interested in just the facts this hour. What happened and why? Where do you feel you've been getting the truth from? Such truth as we have. What is the essential truth of this story? 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK makes the Waco connection. I'd like to start with you, Alan Stone. Huge controversy here and many big questions. In your own head, what are the most important unanswered questions?
Well, for me, the unanswered questions center around not just the last day, which is what the current investigation proposes to look at. Did our people, the government's people, actually fire bullets into the compound? Did they use canisters that might have set the fire unwittingly? Those questions are important, but there are others equally troubling about the last day and about the very beginning of this tragedy. Most people have trouble keeping it straight that the raid initially was by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And when we assembled, the panel assembled in the Justice Department on July 1st, 1993, a few months after the tragedy, we never, to my mind, were given an adequate explanation of why this raid ever occurred in the first place. I hope Americans are going to get an answer to that question. As for the new questions about shooting into the compound, let me say this, that we were given autopsy reports, or at least I was. I insisted on not filing my report until I'd seen the factual investigation. And the factual investigation was very disappointing. But in the factual investigation, it reported that 20-plus members of the Branch Davidians died of bullet wounds. In only a few of the cases did they report that they were bullet wounds at close range. David Koresh himself was shot in the forehead, between the eyes, someone told me. Now, to this date, I've never had a good, solid explanation of all these deaths. The FBI told us they didn't fire a shot and that the Branch Davidians must have killed themselves. Now there's a real question about that.
You wrote in the Wall Street Journal this week, I must say, a remarkably arresting piece, that as a member of the panel, you had been asked basically to come to a judgment or confirm their judgment without seeing the facts. And you said that, and you are a physician, you felt you'd been asked to render a diagnosis and prescription without being allowed to take a history or examine the patient. How in the world did these people, they were, I mean, clearly smart people, relatively young in their jobs at this point, think they could avoid pursuing these obvious inquiries, like how did David Koresh die of a shot between the eyes, if indeed he did? I mean, why wasn't that, first, let's get the facts, why wasn't that the rule?
Well, the Justice Department had drawn a wall, erected a wall between our panel and the factual investigation. And they said, basically, we're not going to reveal any facts to you people until the investigation is complete. And I kept saying, well, how are we to tell you what you did wrong so you can avoid it in the future if you're not going to tell us what you did? But there's a sort of an element to it that I would like to convey to you, which I found very troubling. We were assembled there in the Justice Department, and I asked the people there from the FBI, what did you do wrong? What should you do differently next time? And they went around the table, and they said, nothing. Nobody was prepared to admit that they'd done anything wrong or they should do anything differently. And Janet Reno has basically adopted that same position. She has said, you know, it was a terrible tragedy, but we didn't do anything wrong. I take responsibility for whatever happened, but we didn't do anything wrong. Now, I have thought from the very beginning that she didn't fully understand what she was taking responsibility for. And now, when she hears that there were potentially incendiary weapons used, she is beginning to worry herself, I think, that maybe there are things that she took responsibility for that she never knew about.
Dick Revis wrote a book on all this, The Ashes of Waco, an Investigation. Dick, welcome to The Connection. Give us your own sort of executive summary, if you can, of the most important facts in this controversy.
It might take a long time to do that. I think the general pattern is this. Both the ATF and the FBI went at this operation in a less than professional manner, not to the highest quality work standards. There were various errors. When anyone questioned these errors, the government either said nothing or issued denials. And so at this point, we're now beginning to layer by layer peel back this foul-smelling onion that was Waco in 1993. There was, what's the word, at a minimum, just negligent behavior by both agencies.
Negligent in this case meaning what? I mean, they're there on the alert, but what do you mean by negligence?
Well, negligent, for example, is when they shot all of the tear gas into that building in quantities sufficient to cause very severe physiological reactions, especially on the part of the children. And the tear gas they used was the CS powder. It is mixed with a chemical called methylene chloride, which is an ingredient of paint thinners, and the standard manuals for handling chemicals say don't use this stuff indoors. It poses a fire and explosion hazard. And so I have always been afraid that what happened was they created an atmosphere inside parts of that building that was primed for anything to set it off into a fire, whether intentional or not intentional. You set up a danger and then it happens.
To call it negligence is one thing. What if they meant to do it? What if that was the plan? What if they thought they were on a military mission, and just had the wrong battle plan?
I don't think that there was any central plan to kill the people in Mount Carmel. I don't think such a thing could have been put forth. It may be that there were two or three rogue agents who, on the morning of the 19th, picked up canisters that were incendiary and shot them in. That could have happened. Also, what could have happened is this. They had in their tanks both non-incendiary ferret rounds and incendiary military rounds of three types: military gas grenades, flares, and high explosive devices. And all four of these types of ammunition fit the same grenade launcher. So you're an FBI man, you're sitting in a tank, you're shooting ferret rounds hot and heavy, the record shows that. You reach to reload, and maybe you reach into the wrong box. All the ammunition fits the same gun, and you accidentally fire an incendiary round. given the atmosphere you've created in that building with the methylene chloride, the building goes up. And so mistakes are made by everybody. In most fields of work, when the subordinate makes a mistake, he does not report it to his superior. I don't know why we think that the rules would be any different in the FBI. The FBI is human.
My view is that it would be a big mistake to suggest that anyone in the government did this on purpose, or that anybody wanted to kill the Branch Davidians. I don't think so. I think the tragedy is that the ATF did what they did as an incredible publicity stunt, in which they had notified the television people in advance, you know, come watch us do this dynamic entry, as they called it, on the Branch Davidians. You can televise it, and we're going to capture all these guns. And as a result, they created a tragic situation. I cannot tell you the reckless stupidity of the ATF. It goes beyond negligence. I mean, I think it's clear that they lied to Governor Richards of Texas, telling her that there were drugs inside, and the Branch Davidians, who are derived from the Seventh-day Adventists, are not into drugs of any kind. So this was wholly untrue. I don't think that the FBI had any intention of killing the people. I don't think that Janet Reno would have approved any plan that would even have risked the children. And that has been what's troubling me, particularly. I believe she was misled about the risks to the children of this approach of the gas. Based on my own experience, I think that much gas that they intended to use would have killed the children, even if the fire hadn't broken out.
What was the chain of command here, and did it break down?
The chain of command was very hard to describe. Agent Jamar was in charge on the ground. There was another base about 25 miles away at an airfield, and then there was a central operating room in Washington. Commands were coming from all these places. In the course of the siege, Jamar admitted that there was friction between his tactical people, who wanted to do something and get those Branch Davidians out, and the behavioral negotiation people, who kept telling him, look, we should negotiate. These people are religious fanatics. If we keep pressuring them, we'll drive them to suicide.
How much of the problem was a kind of interagency rivalry? They had different weapons. Some had helicopters. Some were prepared on the ground. They had different analyses. They had different leadership, different relations to the cabinet, different relations to the president as the kind of chief of the U.S. government.
Well, the ATF raid, to begin with, was okayed by an acting assistant secretary of treasury. He hadn't even been named at that point, right? And the ATF got their helicopters from the state of Texas. They didn't have helicopters, right? Mm. So that whole part of the operation ought to be kept separate from what followed after their tragedy, in which four of their agents got killed needlessly, in my view. The FBI took over during the siege that followed. So I think the ATF was particularly reckless. I think the FBI tried to do a good job, but as the days passed and we got to 51 days, there was huge pressure on them, tension within the ranks of the FBI about how to handle it. And then finally, the Do Something people took over and pushed for this tank gas assault. However, I think we're leaving out an important ingredient that I'm concerned about at this point. There's the ATF, there's the FBI. But all through the initial raid, the siege, and the final day, there were military advisors involved. I never was informed about any investigation of what those military advisors did. I have been asking repeatedly since the beginning, who drove those tanks? Are there FBI who are trained to drive tanks? How much military involvement was there? Those are questions that I think have never been answered, and I suspect were redacted from the investigation report.
Dick Rivers, how many of them do you feel are still outstanding, and how many of the questions did you manage to answer yourself?
I would think that most of the questions are outstanding. What I attempted to do in my book was to indict the credibility of the government's version of what happened, to lay out all of these contradictions and evidence of lies, and to say, this thing needs to be investigated. My feeling was that the press didn't do its job during the 51 days or afterwards, that it did not investigate on its own. And my book was in many ways a call to the press to get to the bottom of the thing. Hmm. And I provide in the book dozens of leads to things that ought to be looked at. And so I would think that we should start from a blank tablet. What I think will happen is that if Mr. Danforth finds disturbing information about the April 19th raid, then there will be a call for looking at the rest of it.
Dick, what is your own explanation of why the Clinton administration has been so kind of relentless in what sounds like a cover-up, or at least cover their own butts here?
I don't think it's because they know what happened. Let me describe sort of a difficult scenario. In this country, we've had lynchings ever since we started on the Indians. In the South, in the 20s, we had lots of them, and some of them began when a group of people decided not to kill anybody, but to scare the wits out of them, to punish them in that way. So you mount the man who you suspect on a horse, in this case David Koresh, you put a rope around his neck, you tie it to the tree, but you don't tell the horse to run off. A lynch mob gathers, the public, and it starts saying, as happened at Waco, get the monster, go get him, go get him. And at some point, somebody hits the horse, or the horse gets spooked, or a car backfires and scares the horse runs off. And all of a sudden, you've lynched a man. He's dead. This is roughly what I think happened at Waco. And when Koresh was killed, 80% of the people, the polls show, 80% of the people in this country said he was solely responsible. The FBI, through its press conferences, had said Koresh was a monster, and the people had responded, go get him. Get the monster. So that both Clinton and Reno hit a peak of popularity right after the Waco incident. They had killed the monster. Now, when you're a politician, it's very hard to investigate the basis of your own popularity. You don't want to do that. You want to rest on your record. That's roughly the scenario I think we've got here.
Dick Rivers, thank you, and stand by. Alan Stone, does that make sense to you?
Part of it makes sense to me. I honestly believe that Janet Reno thought an investigation had been done, even though this investigation, in effect, said the operation was a success, but 80 people died. Basically, you didn't do anything wrong. And she stood by that, and so has the Clinton administration. So they've had no reason to look deeper. It's other people like Dick Rivers who have been looking, and like myself, who have been complaining about this for years now.
Yeah, and in meantime, lots of crazy people have been driven to extreme action, like Timothy McVeigh, and lots of people in the center and toward the right have been driven to the wall by perversely obsessive stonewall against simple airing of facts here. You wonder why.
I quite agree. And my wondering, I constantly find, since I tend to be a liberal Democrat, that all of my friends are very antagonistic about my sympathy for the Branch Davidians. Because whatever David Koresh was, as soon as you look into this, as Dick Rivers has and I have, you find that the people inside the compound were decent, religious people. Most of them had nothing to do with the buying and selling of guns or the shooting of guns. They were there as members of a religious sect about which they felt deeply. People don't realize that there were Branch Davidians had gathered from all around the world, that a third of the people inside were people of color, that a graduate of the Harvard Law School was actually one of the people inside the compound. Strange. We can't seem to... They've been so demonized that people are afraid if we are sympathetic to them, then the right-wing people, the paranoid people, will somehow feel they have been reinforced.
And a number of people who have tried relentlessly to get the facts have been tarred with the brush of paranoia or fanaticism. Have you experienced that, Dick Rivers?
Most certainly. I was unemployable roughly from the time, from 1995, from when my book came out, until 2 weeks ago, until this thing came back. Because I was regarded by people who had not read my book as a conspiracist.
Hmm.
This is a good journalist who went crazy. That was the line on me.
Who were the neo-McCarthyists who were touting that line?
The press. My peers.
Like, for example?
The Dallas Morning News. I mean, different places, the word gets back to me what people are saying about me when I apply for jobs. And it was just something I had to live with, and frankly, I never believed that I would see the day when this thing would be reexamined. I thought I just had to, what's the word, live with that. And the problem here we have is that the press runs by consensus.
Mm-hmm.
There is no bottom line. If the consensus in 1993 is that Koresh was a monster who had to be killed off, and it was a good thing we did it, that passes for truth, unless somebody investigates it. And so there was that point of view on the part of most journalists who, and I have to put this in quote, tried to cover that story. They were not in any position then to do their jobs. They couldn't get the story, but they reported that they were getting it. So when my feeling is that when this thing is all shaken out, there's enough blame for everybody. It's not just Janet Reno, if her at all. It's not just the FBI. It's also the press, which should look at its own house and its own procedures.
Yeah, it's a very interesting and rather disquieting point that the press can spend a year sort of hanging Bill Clinton for his sexual peccadilloes and not lift really a serious finger on the question of what did happen at Waco, Texas. We're talking about the examination of the case here on The Connection from WBUR Boston. Alan Stone, our guest, was on the Justice Department's review panel, published his own dissenting piece about it. Dick Rivers wrote the book, The Ashes of Waco, an Investigation. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. David is on the line. Hello, David. David, welcome.
Yeah, if my voice shakes a little, it's because this issue really makes me very angry when I think about it. I want to thank you, Chris, for mentioning the children. I know that the more I hear about it, the Waco situation, people forget that there were children there. I think one reason is because a lot of those children, I believe, were children of David Koresh. And unfortunately, the typical American family didn't see those children as typical American children, so their deaths were really acceptable. And Alan Stone, I think the phrase reckless stupidity beyond negligence really hits the nail. Janet Reno gave her okay to a plan to assault a Davidian compound, fill it up with smoke, and for David Koresh to then gather his people and tell them that his apocalyptic teachings were all false and that they were going to surrender. You don't have to be Aristotle to know that that wasn't going to happen. First of all, it wouldn't be physically possible for them to have that surrender meeting with all that smoke. Also, Koresh and the Davidians had already fired on the ATF. We know that he was preaching an apocalyptic end. So what it comes down to me is an issue of stupidity. And I think we have to start using stupidity as an acceptable reason to demand resignation. right now, Senator Danforth is already starting, I think, another smokescreen here, because he's talking about, he says specifically there are only two issues we're going to look at. Was the fire started by FBI, and was there a cover-up? And he said on McNeil Lehrer last night, we're not going to look at judgment calls. And it is all about a judgment call. It was about that stupid decision to fill that place up with smoke. I just think that Janet Reno needs to go. And one last point is that we have never heard anything about their other ideas. As I was watching the siege on television, it occurred to me, why doesn't somebody ask Reverend Jesse Jackson to step in? Why don't we shut off the sounds of the rabbits being slaughtered, let those people get a good night's sleep, and send in Jesse Jackson and see what happens?
David, I mean, that's possible. You could also send Jimmy Carter, but these are kind of cliches, too. I like your idea in the Wall Street Journal, Alan Stone, to pardon the seven Branch Davidians that are still in prison on various... Yes. Were they honestly convicted?
It's a very troubling trial. Actually, Dick Revis has reported on it very well. What the judge did is, I feel, to overturn the verdict of the jury. I think they should get out on appeal. I actually have been writing to them for the last 2 years and trying to get them pardoned without...
It might be easier than forcing resignations here, but we'll see. We're talking about the Waco case. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. We're funded by the listeners of WBUR Boston and by Anderson Consulting, a global management and technology consulting firm whose mission is to help its clients create their future on the web at ac.com. And by the Heller Graduate School at Brandeis University, offering an MBA degree for health and human service professionals, 781-736-3820.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Fidelity Investments, managing the U Fund College Investing Plan, a program of the Massachusetts Education Financing Authority, 1-800-FIDELITY. The Boston Bean Coffee Company, purveyors of fine coffee equipment and service to the workplace, an exclusive distributor of Peace Coffee and Teas, California's dark roast company. In the weather forecast for today, lots of rain on and off throughout the afternoon, and there will be rain tonight as well. It should end by tomorrow morning. There is a chance of a morning shower, then partly cloudy skies, high 70 to 75. On Sunday, fair skies, a high around 70. Other WBUR supporters include Adesso, adjoining the Four Seasons Hotel, featuring the Ligne Rose Furniture Collection, now open 7 days a week, 451-2212, or on the web at adesso-boston.com. And by the new Bank Boston Pavilion, welcoming B.B. King and the 1999 Blues Festival on September 14th. Tickets at 617-931-2000. In sports action tonight, the Red Sox open up a three-game series with the Yankees at the stadium in the Bronx. Andy Pettit for the Yanks against Pedro Martinez, seeking his 21st win of the year for Boston. This is WBUR.
I'm Jill Kaufman. If you've been thinking about WBUR's Citizens of the World Tour of Romania in late September, it's time to reserve your space now because there are just two seats left. Fall in Romania is full of tradition, colors, and culture, and the trip will include festivals, tours of ancient monasteries, and side trips to Transylvania and Vienna. Join BBC and NPR correspondents for the trip of a lifetime. Call 1-800-909-9287, and thanks.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Waco connection with the Harvard Law professor, who's also an MD and psychiatrist, Alan Stone, and the author, Dick Revis, who wrote the book, The Ashes of Waco, An Investigation. Before we go further on unanswered questions and unresolved facts, Dick Revis, would you just remind us, and Alan Stone, leap in too, if indeed the Branch Davidians were an eccentric but harmless religious sect, why did the Treasury Department's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the FBI go in there as if against Saddam Hussein in the first place?
The first answer is that we don't know because they won't tell us. The Freedom of Information requests that I filed in December of 1993 have not yet been answered. The second answer is that we can speculate. Given the lack of words from the horse's mouth, we have to speculate. And what we find is that the ATF was in trouble. Its agents who were female and another group of agents who were black had filed suit against the agency for racial and sexual discrimination. The ATF had a budget hearing coming up, and the Congress at that point was dominated by Democrats, and it didn't look good for the ATF. Apparently, someone in the ATF thought, we will raid this group of white fundamentalist gun-toting Christians, and we will film our raid, and we will show it at the budget hearing, and the Democrats will love us. Once that raid went bad, it's kind of like the first shot in the war. Who knows who fires it? The rest is revenge. Once that happened, everything was set up.
Alan Stone.
Well, I think I know a little more about it from what was told me in briefings and discussions with people in the Treasury Department. I do think that there was an effort by the ATF to sort of show how good they were. That was part of it. I think they did find out...
Specifically for hearings and budgetary renewal?
Whatever the timing is, let me emphasize that I tried to stay away from imputing exact motives to people. Let me say that their involvement with the Branch Davidians of trying to find out what was going on goes back months and months and months before. Now, they might very well have decided now's the time to do it and get the publicity. But they had been looking into the Branch Davidians for some time. Now, I